Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Jasmine Ramirez Ramos. Jasmine was elected to the Roaring Fork School Board in November of 2019. In May of 2020, she joined with other Latino leaders to establish Voces Unidas de las Montañas, the first Latino-created, Latino-led advocacy nonprofit in Garfield, Eagle, and Pitkin counties. She now serves as the coordinator of Voces Unidas Leadership Program, a program dedicated to training young Latinos in the Tri-County area. Jasmine Ramirez, thanks so much for joining me for Immigrant Stories. I'd like to start where I usually always do, is asking you about your origins. Where did you grow up?
Thanks, Walter, for having me. Yeah, I grew up in Pico Rivera, California. That is where I went to elementary, middle, and most of high. And, you know, I was born in Pasadena, California, and my family moved there to the Los Angeles area when I was very young. My mom is actually a native of Guadalajara, and my dad is from Puebla, Mexico, both of them. And so I was really lucky to grow up in a community that celebrated diversity and culture, and I had just a lot of teachers who also reflected not only how I looked, but also you know, my culture itself growing up.
So you were in a place where your heritage was supported and honored and celebrated?
Yeah, Pico Rivera. Yeah, it's in LA County, and I was a Bernie Bulldog. We had a bilingual program, so I did learn dual language. I am fluent in Spanish, and yeah, I mean, I think that is something that I treasure about my childhood, you know, that we could speak in both languages, and it was seen as a valuable piece of our community.
What did your parents do?
My mom worked at an office at a food distribution, meat packaging, cheese packaging factory for most of my childhood. And then my father worked at a mill. And so he worked there for a really, really long time for most of my childhood.
It was good growing up for you?
Yeah, I mean, I believe so. I think, you know, I'm the oldest of four. So I think, you know, many will relate that when you're the oldest, there is a huge sense of responsibility that comes with that.
So you're the oldest of four. So am I. Yeah.
They're 10 years apart.
Wow. 10 years apart between you and your next sibling?
No, my youngest sister.
Your youngest sister.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we're two girls and two boys.
So you were large and in charge, just like me.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom is actually one of 14, and
wow.
My dad was the oldest of nine. So, big expectations for the oldest.
Your mom's still alive? Is your dad, your dad's passed?
My dad passed in 2008. I had just turned 19, and he actually was working here in town at Target. He worked in the back room, doing, you know, stocking and stuff. And my mom at that time was working for the sheriff's department as a secretary, as a bilingual secretary. And, you know, my siblings were very young, and it was, I think, well, obviously none of us foresaw it. My father was very young. He was 42 years old.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's been really hard.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there was a little bit of just adjusting to a life where we didn't have dad anymore. Yeah, that was a really hard thing. But I think now as a mother, I remember him a lot more. I remember a lot of things about him a lot more. And so I'm really grateful that I had him for the short 19 years, because I definitely think a lot of his legacy and his teachings are what I'm continue to have.
What do you carry of him? What are those things?
Well, there are a lot of things. But I think for me, the discipline and also for him, it was so important and so valuable to always recognize that, yes, his children were born citizens of this country, and how important it was for us to civically engage and just engaged with the community. I mean, growing up, we were part of church groups and marriage encounters and all of these other things that our parents got us involved in. We were athletes.
What do you mean marriage encounters? Explain what that is.
Yeah, so my mom and my dad would go to these marriage encounter retreats. So all the kids kind of got to grow up together, you know? We were extended family. And so even now, you know, as I've had my children and my brother recently had a baby, that's the family that we visit when we go back home because they saw us growing up. We grew up with each other. They're an extended piece of our family. And my parents really focused on the family itself, right? So in order for us to be healthy and happy kids, they needed to have a happy and healthy marriage. And so it was, I think that is something that now as a wife as well, I try to look forward to my family being one unit and one family and just making sure that we're still like focused on our goals as a family.
Right.
And we were heavily involved in soccer growing up. My dad coached our teams. I coached my siblings' teams. Like it was a big part of our family. And, you know, one of the things I always teach my kids now is he used to say, like, if you're going to do something, do it right the first time or don't do it at all. He just was so big on us never forgetting our roots, you know, like never forgetting that we were Mexican, that he was an immigrant. And that it was really important, like, to still be civically engaged and be part of the community, but not at the expense of our identity.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my guest today is Jasmine Ramirez Ramos. Jasmine is a Roaring Fork School Board member and one of the co-founders of the Latino advocacy group, Voces Unidas. Jasmine is remembering growing up in L.A. and the influence her parents had on her life. Well, it's remarkable that your parents were actively working on their relationship. You know, a lot of people say they are, but to go out and have retreats and to be really mindful of this bond, this relationship is pretty remarkable. That's a really wonderful thing that you have. When you talk about him and his discipline, he said it. How did he act it out? What was he like? What did he do that was modeled for you?
Yeah. And I mean, discipline in all extensions of the word was my father. He really wanted us to be able to thrive without him. Sorry, I don't mean to get emotional.
Don't be sorry for that.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think for him, like, you know, making sure that we got up in the morning and everything was ready, like he, you know, even though English was not his first or native language, like he made sure that our homework was done, that our clothes was ready. And I mean, my mom had a lot to do with it as well, but I always say that, like, my dad was secretly a feminist because my brother had to mow the lawn. I also had to mow the lawn. And if we wanted something from the ice cream truck, you know, we definitely worked for that dollar. We had a humongous avocado tree out front. And so, of course, you know, we'd be out there. He'd be cutting them down and we'd be putting them in boxes. And then he'd take us to the restaurants and we'd sell them to businesses around the area, or sometimes, as embarrassing as it was for me at the time, he would make us stand at the corner because we lived in between the middle school and the elementary school, and we'd sell them to families passing by. I have a very sweet memory of my father that of us going to get my brother's haircuts and coming out and seeing a gentleman who, you know, unfortunately didn't have much, was just sitting outside, and seeing my father take off his really good jacket and give it to him is one of, I think, my most treasured memories, because I think it was really important for him to make sure that we saw humility. And I know for our culture, it's really important to, you know, always be humble and not, you know, be too loud. But I think as a father figure, that was something that really impacted my life, of just being able to see a strong man who was very disciplined, who was very, you know, had a very high structure home, be also very gentle.
Yeah.
So I miss him a lot.
Yeah. He was a treasure. Sounds like to me.
Yeah.
How did you watch your mother change with the loss of her best friend?
Yeah, you know, I think, so she got very sick after he passed. And so I think that sort of forced me to grow up. I actually taught myself how to drive. I was just talking about that with her not too long ago, that she got so sick that I sort of forced myself to drive my siblings to school. But, you know, I think I understand her so much more now as a mother and a spouse, because I think at that moment, it was hard for me to take on being a mom too at 19.
Yeah, and, of course.
Now as a mom and as a wife, I can't appreciate her enough for like finishing to raise really the four of us, you know, because my youngest sibling had just turned nine. I think she just turned nine. So she did what she had to do, and all four of us graduated high school. My youngest is about to graduate college. You know, all of my siblings are successful in their own spaces. And so just to admire her now, you know, as a Latina who had the rug taken out from under her, as a single mother of four, and still to be able to get us all through the finish line. And
yeah,
and now she's a grandma. you know, I can't like honor her enough as the warrior she is, you know.
Well, I'm sure they're proud of you, and I know your father would definitely be smiling down on his community organizer daughter.
Thank you. Yeah, I think about him often, and I you know, I do remember once in I think it was 2006, there was a humongous walkout in California. A lot of us high schoolers organized an event. And I thought about this not too long ago. My father went to pick me up. He got out of work early, and I had not told my parents. I assumed I'd be back in time. And my dad called me and was just like, "Where are you? I'm looking for you. You know, nobody's here." And I was almost afraid to tell him what I was doing. And I just said, "You know, Dad, I'm at the city hall in Los Angeles. I'm protesting for immigration." And he said, and I think that was the first time where I really like felt like he, like, not that he was proud of me necessarily, but just that he was like, "She's going to be okay." He just said, "Okay, just, you know, make sure you get home before it gets too dark." And I said, "All right," you know, and it was a very short conversation, but just the fact that he wasn't mad at me, that he wasn't just, right. That, you know, I think that was really big. And I think that really like ended up navigating a lot of my life growing up, you know, after coming home, after he passed, and going back out to college and becoming the student body president of a college, 25,000 students.
Yeah, you know, that's a big deal. That's a job in itself, right? I mean, you have to be a student and you have to lead the student body.
Yeah. And I think I really just always had that in mind of like his, you know, his legacy and my parents' legacy as immigrants in this country, but also for my community of, you know, us as first generation children breaking new ground and really of really just being parts of our community that are making change that needs to be made. And so, yeah, I carry him with me a lot.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Jasmine Ramirez Ramos. Jasmine is a Roaring Fork School District board member and co-founder of Voces Unidas. She is recalling how her mother and father encouraged her to be proud of who she is and the importance of helping others do the same. When did you come to Colorado?
So my family moved out here in 2006. I was a senior. It was my senior year of high school.
Oh, wow. What was that like? I mean, you had to leave all your friends and wow, yeah, that must have been really hard for you.
I was incredibly devastated. It was really hard for me. I have very vivid memories of coming to a new school, of really feeling different, you know, because I was in AP classes and I spoke fluent English and I didn't really know where I fit in. Because it felt like such a separated, almost segregated community in the school. And so I just always had this weird, like, you know, I speak Spanish and I speak it well, I'm fluent and I want to have my Latino friends, but I also have all these classes where there aren't any of my friends. So I obviously have to make friends and, you know, and I don't know. It was a really hard transition for me because I went from like a huge high school that had everything and it just was high school to like having to learn how to navigate school. That was really hard.
Well, you came from a fluid multicultural high school.
Right.
To a basically two culture, yeah, very separate high school. And you were a senior and you just left all your friends. So I would imagine that was a rough navigation.
Yeah, that was really hard. And I did go to school. I mean, I worked part-time during my senior year. And so, you know, I worked at Target. And that was actually where I experienced my first experience with racism. A woman, as I was, you know, a cashier and checking someone out, a woman behind the woman I was serving at the time asked me not to speak Spanish. So that was like the first time that I was like, okay, I'm definitely not in California anymore.
Dorothy.
yeah. So that was really, and I mean, I've had many experiences since then. I mean, in this community as a mother, but I think for me that was one of those moments where I just was like, okay, like apparently racism is still a thing. And I think in California, when in the community I grew up in, it just, I didn't see it because it wasn't prevalent, because there were a lot of Latinos, and so if you spoke Spanish it kind of was like a normal thing.
Yeah. So how did you adjust to that? You definitely have adjusted. You didn't let it cow you and turn you inward. If anything, you got more strident and more resolute to be in the community.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, I don't know if the word is adjusted as much as it is like I just grew accustomed to it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my guest today is Jasmine Ramirez Ramos. Jasmine is recalling her encounters with racism in the Valley and her decision to try to change some of those attitudes.
I remember after my baby was born, she might have been maybe like 9 or 10 months, being at City Market here in town and having one of those experiences where a gentleman said, you know, as we were both grabbing our coffee at Starbucks, said, you know, effing Mexicans. And
we don't usually use the word gentleman for somebody who conducts themselves like that.
Well, he was
that's not a gentleman.
Yeah,
that's a racist.
And I froze. I really
he meant that for you.
He meant that for me. Yeah. And my baby was in my grocery cart. And so I sort of looked at the lady that was working behind the counter at Starbucks, and I think that was the first first time where I realized, like, as much as we assume that we're going to react, right, in this moment of, like, I just, you know, like, how could I? What was I to do? And it was the store I frequent. So I was just sort of
stunned.
And it took me about a week to recover, you know, of, like, not feeling so jittery, you know, going into stores or, like, even with my kids. And then I think I had a really great conversation with one of my mentors, and I bought a gift card and said, you know, if you see that man come in, because he's a regular, just buy him a coffee and say a Mexican bought it.
Wow. So, you know,
I think sometimes,
oh man,
we have to, like, take our power back, because it's really, it's hurtful, you know?
Well, that's practicing with an open heart to practice forgiveness. Somebody who was that rude and mean-spirited to you.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And, you know, I mean, I don't know that I don't know what my reaction would be today. You know, I think about, especially as a mom, you know, when that will happen to my children. I even had that epiphany of, like, the realization that it's gonna happen to my children. And that's really painful. But I also think, you know, I know that there's a day where we're not going to be seen as Mexicans or, like, identified. I mean, we're not, all brown people are not Mexicans. So there will be a day where we're just seen as, like, people in this country, in this community, residents of Glenwood or wherever it may be. And I look forward to that. And I look forward to it mostly for my children.
Yeah, me too. My grandchildren at this point, yeah, I have a dream. You know, I grew up in this town, and I understand that it can be pretty mean-spirited, or some can. It's a really welcoming community if you find the right people, but I've been stunned by some of the same sorts of people, the rhetoric.
Yeah. And it's hard, you know? I mean, as much as it was hard for me as an adult, I mean, it happens to our kids every day. It happens to our teenagers. It happens to our, it really exists. Like, you know, our kids, our high schoolers are working at Walmart and Target and our kids. I remember a couple months before I ran for the school board, a couple of boys got attacked in front of Chili's by grown men, and that was a hate crime. And somehow, I don't know how, it didn't get registered as a hate crime, but those were children. Like, they were under the age of 18, and I can't imagine if that happened to my kid. I really can't. And I think the only reason why it continues to happen is because some of us aren't as privileged as others, and we don't know how to advocate for our kids in that same passion to say, you can't do this to my child. But I don't think it's that they don't want to. I just think they feel far less empowered to be able to do so.
Well, is that part of the motivation for you helping establish Voces Unidas? Is that at the root of that organization trying to create united voices and more voices for Latinos in this community?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think in my experience in running for school board and just realizing how incredibly difficult it is, and then also having those conversations with some of our leaders who maybe felt like it wasn't going to happen or it was so far out of our reach, I think it was really important to say, like, no, you know, we can have representation. We need to have representation. Our children need to see electeds who look like them. They need to have aspirational figures that are dentists and doctors and active community members that are thriving and creating for our community, because we've been here such a long time. And so I mean that was a huge part of it, of just really saying, you know, we can, Latinos that have lived here, that have graduated from our high schools, can speak for ourselves, and we can advocate for ourselves. Right. And And I think it's really that urgency of like, we're way past like where we should be, right? Like it's 2021. There is an urgency.
What do you see out there? What are the hopeful signs that you see?
Oh man. Well, our kids, our high schoolers, our middle schoolers, our even our elementary schoolers, I think, you know, I've had conversations with some high schoolers that I'm like in awe. And then, you know, and I also see a lot of really amazing moms who are allies, who are standing in solidarity and saying, we have to make a better community for our kids.
That was Jasmine Ramirez Ramos, school board member and coordinator of Voces Unidas Leadership Program, a program designed to encourage young Latinas and Latinos to create systems of change that enrich the lives of all the residents of Eagle, Pitkin, and Garfield counties. This show is dedicated to Carlos and Martina Ramirez, who raised their daughter to be proud of who she is and to help others do the same. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. Thanks for listening.